What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Meir Azari, Senior Rabbi and Executive Director of the Daniel Centers for Progressive Judaism in Tel Aviv, the largest and most successful Reform synagogue and center in Israel. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. I've been thinking about freedom lately. This is partly due to the recent death of Nelson Mandela, partly because of the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address about 6 weeks ago, and partly since the section of the Torah we're reading in Temple over these few weeks has been about the exodus from Egyptian slavery and the crossing of the sea to freedom. All three, Mandela, Abraham Lincoln, and the Exodus, are stories of liberation, and while each is unique and represents a very different era, very different circumstances, and has different heroes and villains, there are common elements to all that teach something very important about freedom and can inspire us in this new secular year. All three stories are about achieving freedom from oppression, and all have surprising elements to them.
Freedom, 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 freedom.
Nelson Mandela's passing provided a remarkable opportunity to review the black South African struggle against apartheid, the racist regime that brutally repressed the majority of the population to the benefit of the minority Afrikaner whites. Mandela endured 27 years of imprisonment, most of it on tiny Robben Island, and when the pressure on the regime became too much and they finally liberated him, Mandela eventually became the president of South Africa. But under his courageous leadership, he chose not to seek retributive punishment from his oppressors or to initiate racial warfare, but worked instead to build a truly multiracial South Africa. Through all the challenges of creating an egalitarian democratic nation, Mandela's strength, wisdom, and true greatness helped that country work towards a just and free society without rancor and brutality. South Africa is still a work in progress. But then, aren't we all? Mandela taught that freedom was something for all members of society, that justice and peace can only exist when we drop the temptation to take revenge on our oppressors, and we move forward to build with hope and promise. It's a powerful and meaningful way to make freedom a gift for everyone, and above all, freedom from hatred and hostility that can enslave us and imprison us in a different kind of slavery.
Looking for freedom, looking for freedom, and to find it cost me everything I have.
Before becoming an icon, a famous statue, and the greatest president in American history, according to many, Abraham Lincoln was among the most criticized human beings in American history. His Emancipation Proclamation, as Lincoln himself might have described it, others certainly did, only freed the slaves in those parts of America where he couldn't actually free them. The Civil War, the bloodiest slaughter of men in American history, continued for years as one incompetent Union general after another got his comeuppance from Robert E. Lee in Virginia. And by the year 1864, exactly 150 years ago now, Lincoln and many others believed he was likely to lose his reelection campaign to a peace Democrat who would allow the South to have its independence. And yet, by the end of the war, Lincoln had proven to be the great liberator, the man who managed to shepherd America through its greatest crisis to a time when all people could now be born in freedom. That struggle to liberate the American slaves after 250 years of American slavery was never easy, and achieving racial equality in the reunited states remained a challenge. In part, it has taken so long to get to equality in America because Abraham Lincoln was assassinated before he could implement his plan for it, and because the approach set out in Lincoln's second inaugural address was never implemented. His goal of achieving Reconstruction and liberty was with malice towards none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right. Let us strive to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. That dream of overcoming injustice and establishing freedom came with the structuring of a world without revenge or hatred or bias, in which the better angels of our nature would assert their primacy in our lives. That, too, was freedom from the post-liberation cycle of revenge and anger that represents a new form of enslavement and ugly servitude. Finally, we have the section of the great book of Exodus in which our people achieve freedom from slavery by the hand of God. There's a good deal of death and destruction in these Torah portions, not nearly as much as there was in the American Civil War, perhaps not even as much as there was in the long battle against apartheid, but violence and death nonetheless. Oppressors apparently need to know that there is conviction and strength in the opposition to their domination, and that they must yield and grant freedom, or worse consequences still will come to them. But here too in Exodus, the Israelites are freed and sing of their liberation, but then turn to the work of creating a society based on justice and divine covenant, rather than attempting to enslave or dominate others. In our prayers and songs, we celebrate not the defeat or destruction of the Egyptians, but the liberation of our ancestors. And, grateful as we are to be able to worship and live as we choose, we Jews have always mourned the fact that freedom comes at a price in human lives and suffering, even though that suffering may be our enemies. Well, here in 2014 America, we are blessed with great freedom. But we must also know that true freedom includes freedom from revenge, from anger, from the desire to take retributive action against those who have wronged us. Becoming free of those motivations allows us to be truly free, to rise and embrace the new liberated world with optimism and grace. May we always remember that. A great lesson in this new secular year. And so to play us in on this first Sunday of 2014, here is a take on Mi Chamocha, a passage from this story of freedom in this week's Torah portion of B'Shalach. Who is like you, God among the mighty? Sung in every morning and evening service as performed by the group Shal Shelis. Mikamaicha bavayinu mashem, mikamaicha, mikamaicha nedar b'hakodesh, nayra sihi laysay sefele, nayra sihi laysay sefele. Mikamaicha, mikamaicha bavayinu mashem, mikamaicha, mikamaicha nedar b'hakodesh, Naira see my son Naira see my son Sefele Shira Hadasha Shiva Chodulim Lishim Chahakada Lausa Sayam Yachad Yachad That was Shalshela singing Micha Mocha from the Song of Moses at the Sea in this week's portion of Beshalach. The Reform movement in Israel has been growing by leaps and bounds, and it is now engaged in contemporary Israeli society in ways that were almost unimaginable 20 or 30 years ago. Meet the dynamic rabbi of the largest Reform congregation in Israel, Rabbi Meir Azari of the Beit Daniel Centers in Tel Aviv, when we return here on Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics. And they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org.
It's a pleasure to welcome to Too Jewish this morning our guest, Rabbi Meir Azari. He's the rabbi of Beit Daniel, the most successful Reform progressive congregation in Israel.
My mother would love to hear this.
Yes, please. You have to have her listen. You might have to translate for her, but you have to have her listen. Beit Daniel, I actually had the privilege of being present at its dedication because an old congregant of mine from Santa Barbara, may rest in peace, Bill Daniel's brother, and he gave a lot of the funding for the original location, and nobody knew if a brand new building in the northern part of Tel Aviv would really succeed. It has succeeded beyond, I think, many of our wildest dreams. Welcome, Meir. Boker Tov.
It's a great pleasure to be with you here, Sam. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about Beit Daniel, because you have really taken it to prominence all over Israel as part of the sort of rebranding of Reform movement in Israel.
Yeah, because Reform Judaism was not known to most of the Israelis. This is probably European and American concept, although I prefer to see it as an old Jewish concept, but for many Israelis that grew up in Arab countries or East Europe, pluralism and democracy, that unique combination is quite new. And Reform Judaism can flourish where pluralism and democracy exist, when human rights and women rights are there. This is the essence of our movement, and we didn't have that until a certain point, and Beit Daniel was actually the first synagogue that was open in Israel as a Reform synagogue, 91.
Right.
It's quite a while since the state was established, 48 to 91, but we were very happy to start a mission and to bring the voice and the unique journey of Reform Judaism to Israelis. As you said earlier, we didn't know if it will work. It right. works. Many Israelis, instead of choosing the old structure, being Orthodox or being secular, suddenly discovered that there's a lot in between. And Reform Judaism and Beit Daniel and what we call today Daniel Centers for Progressive Judaism is the voice of many, many Israelis, those who are not Orthodox and those who are not secular as well. Most of the Israelis that call themselves secular Jews are, in the end of the day, Reform or conservative in their American way. They will be considered here in America, North America, as Reform or conservative Jews.
So, you know, it used to be that when you said Reformim in Israel, they actually had no idea what you were talking about.
No idea for one side, but for the other side,
totally negative.
Many thought negative way about Reform Judaism, because in our textbooks, those who are prepare the kids for matriculation, the final exams before going to the army,
the Bagrut,
what we call it in Hebrew. Most of those books, when they talk about history, they will mention a little bit the story of Reform Judaism, and they will mention the concept that Reform Judaism opposed the Zionist movement, and they erase the word Zion from the prayer book. that we were not there when the Zionist movement started, and it's a challenge to bring to the Israelis.
It's like revisionist history.
Yeah, to bring to the Israelis the story of From Judaism, and they know from their matriculation tests that we were not there in 48 and 47 as a movement. Also, there were few Reform rabbis, and we should know that and emphasize that, that were there holding the hands of the little child, the State of Israel. Rabbi Abba Hillel Silver,
of course,
a great Reform rabbi, was the leader that was chosen by the Zionist movement to introduce United Nations, the concept of the Zionist world. He spoke in that unique day, 29 of November, the day where the United Nations voted and approved
the resolution.
Abba Hillel Silver, Reform rabbi, was there, and Yehuda Lev Magnus, late Yehuda Lev Magnus, a great rabbi from New York,
made Aliyah help found the Hebrew University of Jerusalem,
and tell that to Israeli. No, how come Yehuda Lev Magnus? He is a Reform rabbi. For most of the Israelis, he is a giant, but not a Reform rabbi. And we have to start. We had to start from almost scratch.
From scratch.
It took time. The Israelis are here in our synagogues, are there in our synagogues in Israel. We're talking in the building of San Diego.
Here we are, meeting in San Diego.
They're coming. Our synagogue that started 23 years ago, Beit Daniel, has this year 220 bar mitzvot.
220.
This is even in America a major record.
Unbelievable.
And
number.
We have 400 weddings that are done through the synagogue, through the rabbis working at the synagogue, the rabbi that will ring outside from Tel Aviv. It's a lot. It's a huge number.
Right.
And you have to understand that it's not yet recognized by the State of Israel.
Still people are coming.
Still more people are coming. And the elite of the Israeli society is coming to us. They learn with us. You know, they are part of the renaissance of the Jewish world of today, happening in Israel, and more than that, in Tel Aviv, the city that people consider as a secular city. You know,
the heart of secular Israel.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. We are there in order to bring Jewish lights and spirit and energy and wisdom, and doing that as an egalitarian movement, a movement that believes that Judaism can be fun, full of energy, and this is great. People are happy to see that in Tel Aviv.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Meir Azari of Beit Daniel in Tel Aviv and the Daniel Centers. We'll talk about what that means when we come back on Two Jewish.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
Among my most pleasant, at least time-consuming duties, I have the honor of serving as president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, which celebrates the memories of Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan, my own grandparents. Once a year, the foundation gives a substantial cash award to an individual for outstanding service to Klal Yisrael, the totality of the Jewish people. This service can involve any one of four different fields: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. If you know of anyone who might qualify for the 2013 Kohan Award, just visit our website, www.kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N, and you'll find the nomination form to submit. And while you're there, you can also learn just who my own grandparents were and who participates in honoring their memory today. That's kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N-A-W-A-R-D. It's a good visit. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have three stores. We're opening a fourth in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at tojewishradio@yahoo.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio, or tojewishradio18@gmail.com, or visit our website at tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. And now, for the new secular year, we welcome the return of a favorite, occasionally recurring feature, our Zen Judaism moment, the Too Jewish Haikus for Jews. Jewish exercise in its four sacred stages. Stretch, kvetch, schwitz, zitz, plots. That was our Zen Judaism segment, A Haiku for Jews. This one thanks in large part to Charles Heller for his donation of a clever cartoon. We welcome our Mivina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center here in Tucson. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Partnership, shutafim, shared work, is a very important concept throughout the Jewish world. Tell us a little bit about what it means to have a partnership region and what the partnership region is here and how it all works.
Okay, so partnership together, it's a program initiated by the Jewish Agency almost 18 years. They celebrated Chai Shanim together this year. And it started as a before, like 20 years ago, it was like a shikum shchunot, like a neighborhood rehabilitation program that, you know, Jewish people around the world send money to the state of Israel, and they help the cities mostly in the periphery of Israel. And then they understand that they have a gold mine, because it was the only program that actually allowed Jewish people around the world to connect Israelis, you know, without no vehicles, just meet an Israeli, can ask questions, host by them for a dinner or coffee, meet their son that just came back from army, and really to see like an Israeli soldier, a young man. It sounds like a cliche, but after 18 years, like everyone around the world, every Jewish community indicate the partnership as the only vehicle and the best vehicle to actually do people-to-people connection, people-to-people programs. Sometime it will be the first step of a Jew or in encounter with Israel, and then it will lead to a profound experience in Israel to go to Masa or Taglit or, you know,
one of the other programs that will connect you, whether it's Birthright or an Israel program or some way of connecting.
So our partnership, like Tucson, Phoenix and Seattle have a partnership with Kiryat Malachi and Chofash.
I've always wondered, how come it's Tucson and Phoenix? That's very simple to understand. And Seattle? It's one of those mysteries of Jewish... Never mind. One of the mysteries of Jewish life.
Yeah, it's for next show.
All right. Next show we can talk about it.
So three Jewish community from United States with two localities in Israel, Kiryat Malachi and Chof Ashkelon.
Which are in the south and they're...
In the south,
challenged communities, you know. Financially, resources aren't so great. Mm-hmm. Lots of newish immigrants to Israel.
As I told you, it's mostly in the periphery cities that needs help. So one of the things that Tucson is doing is donating a lot of money to help mainly Ethiopian population in Kiryat Malachi, but also funding a lot of people-to-people connection, mainly from last years. And if I can tell you just a short example of a people-to-people program that we're really proud to launch next month, it's 10 families from Tucson. We'll start a program with 10 families from Kiryat Malachi, and they will have the same book called Same Moon. And they, once a month, the whole family will get together and they will fill one page of the book. It sounds great. No TV, no iPad, no nothing, just the family,
right?
In some subject related to Israel. And they will send it to the family from Israel. And at the end of 6 months, the family from Israel will have a book of a family from Tucson, and the family from Tucson will have a book about family from Israel. And it can be a start. And then we can do another programs that, you know.
It's a great kind of virtual community and a way of connecting people, mm-hmm. you know, on a human level to Israelis, not because of what you see mm-hmm. on the news, not because mm-hmm. of what you hear on the air. Thanks so much, Ashrat. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, J-E-T-C-O, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. The state of Arizona allows its taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, who then provide scholarships for kids from kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get a 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Tax credit's not a deduction. Your taxes are reduced by the amount you give. Join over 750 supporters last year who donated money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, call 520-647-8442. Again, 647-8442. Or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of education.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And happy secular new year.
And to you.
We've been talking about the connection between international terrorism and the international drug trade. And it goes back to a conversation I had in December with a guy who's a DEA special agent dealing with the international drug trade. Talking about the connection between regimes in the Middle East and the drug trade, and also the terror groups and other groups that resist those regimes and their connection to the drug trade. So it's a complicated mix. Let's follow up on that a little bit.
Right. Well, first of all, even in the most legitimate and unquestioned regimes in the Middle East, to the degree that such a thing exists, there are probably some members of the government or the families of the government or the Saudi royal family or whatever, who on some lower level instruct policemen to look the other way when so-and-so does a major drug deal. Because one of the big illicit sources of income, especially in the poorer countries like Afghanistan, Syria, Lebanon, whatever, is the drug trade, whether it's a transit trade or drugs produced in country. And of course, one of our early issues with the Taliban before 9/11, before we associated Taliban and terrorism, was that they were responsible for a major portion of opium derivatives going into the former Soviet Union and onward to Europe. So we tried to sponsor crop substitution programs, like grow onions instead of opium poppies and we'll pay you, with mixed success, because there's obviously much more money to be had
in opium than in onions.
Right. And then, you know, there's the whole question of what alternatives do people have? You know, as defined by any dictionary, the Soviet regime, particularly under Stalin, was a regime that practiced state terrorism, that banished people to awful camps, that shot people arbitrarily, and basically created a state of terror in which people lived constantly. So we quickly judge that to be an evil empire. But in fact, one of the most interesting things to me, and it's a question that still haunts me, was my very first lengthy visit to Afghanistan in the early 70s, when the Soviet Union was still under Brezhnev. I saw that Kabul had open sewers, no sanitation. There was very low literacy rate, particularly in the rural areas. Almost no women could read and write. Public services, virtually non-existent. Public health care, whoever heard of that? Whereas you fly an hour north to Tashkent, which has been under Soviet rule for 100 years, and which 100 years ago was exactly the same as Kabul, and you see everybody's got electricity, there's universal literacy, there's healthcare, whatever. And so, you know, there was a trade-off. Like, we consider the Soviets to have been an extreme example of bad governance, of practitioners of state terrorism, and yet they accomplished a lot. And is it worth the trade-off? And there's often a question of, if you install an authoritarian regime that denies people fundamental freedoms, but accomplishes a huge amount of social good, is it worth the trade-off? Or would you rather have the Wild West and loose terrorists and drug traders and really a free market? Because to have a thriving drug trade, you need a free market. And we always say we want free market. So the questions become very politically interlinked and complicated. And none of it is as black and white as it first appears. I think that's all I want to say for the moment.
We will talk much more, Tom. It is certainly complicated. And it's, I think, increasingly interesting to a lot of people when we talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A few minutes before services are scheduled to start, and just as the Shul's congregation is sitting quietly waiting, Satan suddenly appears. There's total panic. Members run to the exit screaming. Some are trampled as they fall in their frantic efforts to get away from the devil. Within moments, the shul is empty, except for Morris, a gray-haired 75-year-old guy who remains sitting calmly in his seat. Morris seems totally unaware that God's ultimate enemy is in his presence. Satan, seeing that Morris is the only one remaining in the shul, comes over to him and in a booming voice says, "Do you know who I am?" "Yes, of course. The horns give you away," Morris replies. "Aren't you afraid of me?" says Satan. "No, certainly not," says Morris. "Do you know that I can kill you instantly?" says Satan. "So new already. Be my guest," replies Morris. "But don't you know that if I want to, I can cause you unbelievable, horrifying agony for all of eternity?" storms Satan. "Big deal," replies Morris. Morris's responses so shock Satan that he asks one more question. "So tell me, why aren't you afraid of me?" And Morris answers, "Because I've been married to your sister for 50 years. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Journeys are centrally important in Judaism. The act of leaving and heading out into the great unknown is crucial for all of us. At some level, the proper theme song for Jews ought to be "On the Road Again." Repeatedly, in Jewish tradition, great leaders, even the whole of our nation, heads out into the wilderness to seek God and make a new life somewhere else. It happened first with Abraham in the Torah portion of Lech Lecha. It happens two generations later with Jacob, whose name is changed to Israel and is in most ways our founder. And it happens again with Moses, who flees his country of birth in Egypt to find God in the Sinai, and then leaves there to go back to Egypt and finally takes the whole people of Israel out of slavery in this week's portion of B'Shalach and puts us on the path to redemption and freedom. And it keeps happening throughout Jewish history. The idea of the wandering Jew has ideological relevance as well as pathos. Wandering seems to be something we need to do, not just something we are forced into. In particular, Jewish religious tradition has a peculiar perspective on the events of the Exodus, which reach a climax in this week's portion of B'Shalach. It's true that the drama of Jewish history really begins with the story of the Exodus from Egypt and the escape from Pharaoh on the shores of the Sea of Reeds, and it's logical we focus on that. But in our prayers, practices, and traditions, we raise up this escape from slavery and heading out into the wilderness to the highest conceivable historical status, far beyond what others might seem would be appropriate. It's not just the way we make Passover into such a central holiday. Well and good. A festival of freedom should be focally important, but we remind ourselves of this Exodus far more often than once a year. Every Friday night, in fact, when we say Kiddush, we declare that we observe the Sabbath, Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, in remembrance of the Exodus from Egypt, which is scarcely true, since according to our own Torah, the Shabbat goes back to God's creation of the world long before the Exodus. We focus on this great narrative and its denouement in nearly obsessive ways. Why? Perhaps because, in effect, our central Jewish story is about transition, travel, hitting the road. It's a core narrative. To paraphrase Descartes, we left, therefore we are. Our essential nature as a people is formed by the Exodus. When we find ourselves in slavery, either physical, psychological, or moral, we must, as Jews, choose to leave. And seeing how our ancestors did it against all odds in order to find a new life of ethical freedom and covenant with God should inspire us today to make the same kinds of choices. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Meir Azari, the dynamic rabbi of Beit Daniel, the largest Reform congregation in Israel, will explain just how fast progressive Judaism is growing in the Jewish state. Find out what its prospects are in this year when we return on To Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114. We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
For the first time in Israel's history, the Religious Services Ministry last week transferred money into the bank account of the Reform Movement to cover the salaries of four Reform rabbis who lead congregations. This move comes 8 years after the Reform Movement first launched a legal battle for funding on the same basis as Orthodox rabbis and against the background of the current government's increasing recognition of non-Orthodox streams of Judaism. It also comes 18 months after the historic Supreme Court ruling that was reported more or less live here on Too Jewish from Israel when we interviewed the principal figure in that lawsuit, Rabbi Miri Gold. And now it has finally been implemented. This is the historic and important step in the long struggle towards pluralism, religious freedom, and the recognition by the State of Israel of all branches of Judaism, said Rabbi Gilad Kariv, director of the Reform Movement in Israel and a past guest of Too Jewish. He added the Reform Movement will continue to act to redefine the relationship between religion and state in Israel, to separate the religious establishment from the authorities. However, as long as the state continues to fund religious services and salaries of rabbis, we will make sure that this is done on an egalitarian basis. The 300,000 shekels, about $85,000, deposited last week, is expected to cover the salaries of Reform rabbis in the regional councils of Gezer, Mate Yehuda, Miskav, and Hevel Eilot. Rabbi Miri Gold of the Birkat Shalom congregation at Kibbutz Gezer headed the petition to the Supreme Court way back in 2005, demanding that the Gezer Regional Council and other councils fund the positions of congregational leaders even if they are not Orthodox, just as Orthodox rabbis are funded. In addition to Gold's position, the funding will cover the rabbi's salary at several other Reform congregations. The Shas Party was opposed to the funding coming from the budget of the Religious Services Ministry during its tenure in the previous government. The compromise that was reached put the Culture and Sports Ministry in charge of setting regulations and transferring funding to the Reform movement, which employs the rabbis. The latest move is one of a number of recent steps towards greater official recognition of non-Orthodox branches of Judaism in Israel. These include the government's decision to establish an egalitarian prayer area at the Kotel, the Western Wall, and the participation of Religious Services Minister Naftali Bennett at the International Conference of the Conservative Movement recently. A couple of weeks ago, Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu addressed the Reform Movement's U.S. conference by live video link. I went to that one, by the way, saying that Israel is and must continue to be the homeland of the entire Jewish people. That is the place where all Jews, including Reform Jews, experience nothing less than audacious hospitality. He borrowed that last phrase from the president of the Union for Reform Judaism, Rabbi Rick Jacobs. Big news indeed, and about time. On the other side of the coin, the chief rabbinate in Israel, the Rabbanut, has decided now to disallow any conversions, marriages, or halachic opinions from one of the most prominent modern Orthodox rabbis in America, Rabbi Avi Weiss, because of what it calls his questionable commitment to Jewish law, halacha. While many in the American Orthodox rabbinate are stepping forward to support Rabbi Weiss, the rabbi of the very prominent Riverdale Jewish Center in New York and the founder of Yeshiva Chovavei Torah, the controversy again highlights the incredibly out-of-touch nature of the chief rabbinate in Israel. May it change soon. In other news, the list of the top recipients of charitable gifts in 2013 is out. And in spite of its financial problems and the swirling scandal of child molestation surrounding it, Yeshiva University made the list of recipients. Its gift came in the form of a $160 million bequest to YU's Albert Einstein College of Medicine from the estate of Muriel Block, who died back in September of 2010. Though Yeshiva University was the only Jewish recipient in the top 10, there were several Jews among the biggest givers, including two of the top three. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg gave the biggest gift of all, about $1 billion, to the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, whatever that is, and ex-New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg took spot number three with a $350 million gift to Johns Hopkins University. Clearly, Jewish tzedakah is not dead or even ailing. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi Meir Azari. He is the rabbi, the senior chief.
Just a mensch. Try to be a mensch.
The mensch rabbi of Beit Daniel and the Beit Daniel Centers in Tel Aviv, the largest and most, of course, the first real Reform congregation founded specifically in Tel Aviv. There's more than one Beit Daniel entity now. Can you talk about that a little
bit? Yeah. Through the years, we decided that we can do more than just one synagogue. And the next step that we did is we founded a network of preschools that are run by the city of Tel Aviv and our educators, not in the building of Beit Daniel, but around the city. The 21 locations that are spread around the city,
so,
and serve all together, 21 ganim all together, about 800 kids goes every day to our preschools.
Fantastic.
The next step was we built a guest house that serves Israelis and people from all over the world, mainly Jewish kids and adults that are coming from different places, missions like Birthright, like Massa, congregation from all over the world are sharing the time in Tel Aviv in our building, 30,000 guests a year. The building was built with the help of the city of Tel Aviv, the same city that years earlier fought with us against building the Reform Synagogue. The city gave us the land in Jaffa, and on top of the land, they gave us $2.5 million to build this unique project. We're very happy with the building and the blessing.
It's a beautiful building.
Beautiful building and the blessing that the Daniel family helps us to gain in the heart of Tel Aviv Jaffa. We took an area that was controlled by drug dealers and violence and made it, I think, a beautiful pearl. You just see the people walking there, the touring that are going out from the building. So the walking tours that we do around the city of Tel Aviv and Jaffa, we try to tell to guests from all over the world, and Israelis as well, that Judaism can be fun, that they should pay attention to the special symbols and signs in Tel Aviv. So the signs, the symbol, the smell, they can learn Judaism and can learn pluralism and the progress in the spirit of Judaism. For example, we do a unique tour, we call it the bread tour. Jaffa, we call it in Hebrew, Jaffa, is well known in the Israeli and the Hebrew language as a city where you can eat pita and bagel and burekas. And
the best bakeries,
Are in Jaffa. If, any
Israelis, about the water, who knows?
Something is unique there. But recently we have croissants and the modern, you know, style of bakery, and we go from bakery to bakery and we learn together the way that the bread, our attitude to bread change, the bread changed, including the religious aspect, what Judaism thinks about bread, Christianity, what type of blessing we say. So through the legs and smell and the eyes, we can learn Judaism, and this is the spirit that we brought. We built a congregation there. Rabbi Mira Raz, a wonderful and very spiritual leader, is running a congregation there. We have another congregation in the center, in the heart of Tel Aviv. We call it, in American style, New Age. So all together, under the roof of Beit Daniel right now, we have three services. Every Shabbat, we are offering to each one of the people in Tel Aviv a different type of reform or modern Judaism.
Right.
And this is just the beginning. I can tell you that if we'll talk here in your show a few years from now, it will be even more than that.
You know, it is astonishing. I remember as a rabbinical student in 1991 and taking a bus and going down to Tel Aviv, and really, like, if you asked someone what Reform Judaism was, I was attending the Reform Seminary, nobody knew what you were talking about. Or if they did, it was a negative perception. Not always, but I mean, there were such things, but
most of the Israelis today will recognize the name Reform Judaism.
Very much.
The last survey that was done by independent institutions will tell that 7 to 8% of the Israelis will identify themselves as Reform or Conservative Jews.
Right.
About 1/3 of the Israelis participate in Reform wedding or Reform bar mitzvah or any other event that we do.
Or even a high holiday services.
For example, we are running a program from 9 o'clock in the evening until 6 o'clock in the morning that will draw Tikkun Shavuot, that will draw thousands of Israelis through the night. I remember myself last Shavuot at 1 o'clock in the morning teaching, and more than 500 people in the class. It's a trip to be it's really a unique treat to be a rabbi and feel so blessed at 1 o'clock in the morning in Shavuot. You have 500 people coming to hear you talking about this subject or that subject. We usually have during that night Israeli celebrities, you know, singers and writers. We had for years Yair Lapid, today the finance minister, one of the major figures in the Israeli television, talking every Shavuot at midnight. And recently published a book of his lectures on that event of Shavuot. We talk and we bring Judaism in the way that Israelis can understand. Not why God is angry with us, but why and how we can make God happy with what we do. This is the type of Judaism that we bring to the Tel Avivians. And they are looking for something. They are looking for spirituality. They are looking for themselves. They want to be rooted in the Jewish tradition. This is their tradition. And this is why they are living in Israel.
You know, Tel Aviv has a unique character. It's a remarkable city. And, of course, it's known for its, nowadays, one of the great destination cities in the Mediterranean. It's got a very liberal feel to it, very open kind of culture. Is Reform Judaism, is the way that you're doing it at Beit Daniel, is it exportable beyond Tel Aviv within Israel?
Yes. I think first, about the spirit of Tel Aviv, no doubt. It's unique. And this is the magnet today for the young generation. I can see...
Everybody wants to live in Tel Aviv.
The Israelis. We have a problem. I have problems with my two kids that wants to live in Tel Aviv. It's quite a challenge. Mm-hmm. When I walked or drive and I sit at a coffee shop or a restaurant, I always hear the English. Mm-hmm. So a lot of young Americans and European are in Tel Aviv. This is a city that magnets the young Jewish generation. With all the respect to Jerusalem and the holiness of the city, the young generation lives in Tel Aviv. Even your kids are living in Tel Aviv, or trying to be there. By the way, we have a beautiful community in Tel Aviv of those who just finished college. And they do a year work of Tikkun Olam in Tel Aviv under the hospice of Ben Daniel. And organization called Bina, program called Tikkun Olam. Mm-hmm. Tel Aviv is a magnet, and Tel Aviv can be explored to other communities around Tel Aviv, Holon, Bat Yam. There's no reason why Haifa would be secular or reform as well, of course, no doubt. And I think that many, many Israelis are waiting for the voice and the spirit of Reform Judaism. More than that, I think that what we created right now in Tel Aviv, the spirit and the energy, can be adopted and be found outside of Israel as well. I just spoke in a seminar here, the conference, how to attract Israelis, how to bring to the Israelis that living here in North America.
States, right?
We have about half a million of them here.
Yeah. Which is a size of proportion of the six and a half million Jews in America.
I don't think that there are 6.5 million, but let's say it's a if a 6 or 7
somewhere
Jewish person here is an Israel, former Israelis,
right.
They're so close to their full movement, but the introducing
them to the introduction
was not made yet.
Right.
So we have to do that. We developed a concept of building congregation without walls. Mm-hmm. We'll pay less. We pay less attention to the fact that if you pay a membership dues or you didn't, come to a service, come to activity, pay for the service that you get, bar mitzvah, a wedding. We managed to get 80% from our budget from within the community, but not through membership fee, which is a unique concept.
It's a very different way of approaching.
Very different, and people, Israelis, and I think that people here will feel better if that will be the concept. There's a lot of pressure upon the rabbi and upon the community, but it's doable, and this concept is growing. I think that we'll see here 10, 15 years from now, congregation in America built on that concept.
I think you're right. And there are some examples of people moving in that direction.
I just heard a congregation in Los Angeles.
Yeah, Icar.
That doesn't have a synagogue, a building. They are running from place to place. And they charge for services they did. I mean, it's not the right concept, but this is maybe the concept that will be affected to part of the Jews that are not willing to pay the $2,000 or $3,000 in advance.
It's a different generation here, yeah.
Different generation, puts a lot of pressure upon the rabbi. It's not for certain that you will join to the congregation, that your member will be there next year or year after that.
Right.
But as we see, you have a challenge here as well, as we have in Israel.
Yes, for sure.
And we have to think always creative way, always about tomorrow, always about how to make sure that Jews that are not served today will be find a way to be served tomorrow. So this is what we do. And I think that it's a great concept. Probably fits to part of the communities of the congregations here in North America.
Here, final question. If we were to have this conversation, you know, certain aspects of the development of rights in Israel have been associated with the Reform Movement, particularly egalitarian qualities, that women are included fully in everything. And some aspects of civil rights in Israel that are we accept as ordinary in America, the Reform Movement has been strongly identified with that. After those battles are won, and I think they will be won, will that continue to benefit the Reform Movement, or will the Reform Movement move somewhere else?
Firstly, it would benefit the state of Israel, for sure. The citizens of the state of Israel, that doesn't have the privilege to benefit from a unique spirit that we see here in this conference. How people together, men and women, straight and gay and lesbian, can have equal share in building a movement and a synagogue and a community together. It's a shame that in this point in life, I can't serve fully my congregants. If they want to get a Reform wedding, they will have me there in Tel Aviv for the wedding, but they will have to go to Cyprus in order to have a civil ceremony, a legal ceremony. So the Gentile sitting in Larnaca, in Paphos, cities in Cyprus, or the guy in Las Vegas or New York is good, but the mayor of Tel Aviv or a Reform rabbi from Tel Aviv is not good.
Right.
We'll win the battle. It will take a long time and a lot of efforts, and we need your support and your present in this fight. After that, we will bring the best of it to the state of Israel. Israelis need in their battle for survival the spirit of Reform Judaism, the positive way to look upon life, the way that you think about the other, the way that you put human rights and women rights as part of your agenda and your religious agenda.
Right.
So, this is a battle to be won yet, and we are there to fight and be part of this fight.
I want to commend Rabbi Meir Azari on a great visit here at Two Jewish to continue the fight. People can go to what website to find out more about Beit Daniel?
Just write Beit Daniel. Probably it will be Beit Daniel.
B-E-I-T.
B-E-I-T. Daniel, as you hear that, it's so simple. Or Daniel Centers for Progressive Judaism, Tel Aviv. You'll see us in the Facebook and the website. We are there. Come and visit if you are planning a visit to Israel by yourself. Come and stay at our guest house at Tel Aviv, come to our services, and give us from your spirit and presence, and smile, bring a smile when you come to Tel Aviv. This is a city very different than Jerusalem.
Very
energetic. Don't take the whole history upon your shoulder when you come to Tel Aviv. Come, enjoy, party, have the energy of Tel Aviv, and give a little bit to the energy of the city.
Thank you so much. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. when our guest will be Alan Marinus, the leading figure in the revival and modernization of Musar, the Jewish exploration of personal ethics and character formation that has become a movement in contemporary Judaism. Our playout this morning comes from Raviv Ben Menachem and his group known as the Revivo Project, performing a Yemenite-flavored Sephardic celebration of Shabbat. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. Let's share.